This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Never read the comments in half an hour here on The Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. But right now, before we get to all the comments left on YouTube by a whole variety of people, let's talk to a very smart person who joins us each and every week. It's time for Not My Beat.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not My Beat.
Our pleasure to welcome in for his Thursday visit Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team, one of their lead NFL writers. Dan, what's up? How are you, dude?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm stunned, though, Dan. Stunned. Do you know why I'm stunned?
I believe so.
So last week, we had a little fun at the end of our chat with your quarterback rankings and how you have some systems in place to ensure that you do not overreact to things. There's a scoring system. There's a baseline level of like, hey, this is kind of what I thought. That way, you know, as things change, you don't get too swayed by one game. And Jaden Daniels was kind of in the middle of the pack because he's still a rookie and all the reasons, and it makes total sense. I look up this morning, Dan, and look who is atop of your quarterback rankings. Why did you move Jaden Daniels to number one? Why did you give in to all of us? Is it because you're coming on the show today?
No, it is not. So after we had that, you know, fairly lengthy discussion of what was going into those rankings last week, we ended up changing what goes into the ranking. So they are now like half of the kind of skill set rankings that I am still doing, watching these quarterbacks every week, kind of grading them on, you know, different types of skills that they have, arm strength, accuracy, things of how these quarterbacks are individually playing. And then we also added, to get a slightly more, I guess, accurate picture of what's actually happening in 2024, we now have a composite of EPA per play and success rate that is half of the score too. So it's half of still the grades and the skill set that I'm looking at, now half EPA per play and success rate. And when we put the actual production in for 2024, Jaden Daniels jumped to the top, and it's kind of hard to argue with that, with how he's played, you know, and the production he's produced so far.
So is this something that when you've done rankings like this in the past, you reach like a threshold in the season where it's like, okay, there's enough data here to put something more objective from a data standpoint, because one outlier isn't going to drive things in an untoward way? Or is this something new that you've added this year in Jaden Daniels because he's been ridiculously productive through five games as the beneficiary?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. It kind of got to a point where, you know, through, you know, 4 or 5 weeks is where you can start getting a more of a sense of what's going to happen, and things aren't going to really, you know, fluctuate quite as much. You know, if you were doing an EPA like base ranking off of, you know, week one, those rankings kind of would have looked a little crazy. But also just kind of looking at trying to get a slightly better, you know, there were some people who wanted more of an actual look of like what was actually happening in 2024. So, you know, having a ranking that still had, you know, Patrick Mahomes as a number one, and, you know, some other guys like Jaden Daniels lower. So we decided to, I worked with some of the editors. I kind of came up with more of a, you know, a ranking that has the best of both worlds, I think, right now. So we still have half of it on like how these quarterbacks are playing kind of in a vacuum. And then you have the production. I think, you know, week five is a bit of where that probably does set in a little more, where it does make sense to start introducing those into the rankings. And it's not going to be as, you know, crazy of a leap.
So let's go into your subjective part of this. Dan Pizzuta, writer for the 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. Definitely worth checking out the rankings, taking a look at the scores, how they come together, and then, of course, reading the parts that Dan actually writes. Everyone loves the graphic, but don't forget to read the words as well, the blurbs on each guy if you want to know more. But when you take a subjective look, I think last week's super interesting. You know, the success rate and some of those numbers come down for Jaden last week, but some of the EPA per play and some of the other numbers are just fine, because he finds these big, monstrous plays. What did you think of the week that he had last week and how he kind of found a different way to get things done and still ultimately put a 30-burger up on what was supposed to be a good Browns defense?
Yeah, I think that was one of the cool things, and actually, you know, one of the kind of optimistic things about looking at how he played, where the success rate wasn't quite as good. So on a down-to-down, consistency wasn't as good as he'd been, you know, in previous weeks. And that was because, you know, Cleveland was doing some things that disrupted what Washington wanted to do, but they were able to find the big plays, like you said. And the way they were able to do that, I think, was, you know, a really a positive sign for what he's going to do going forward. What is it, the 66-yard pass to Terry McLaurin,
yeah,
when, you know, it, as we were, you know, talking earlier in the year, that's probably a ball or a play earlier in the year, weeks 1 and 2, where he gets out of the pocket. He's probably running for a little bit. Last week, his eyes are down the field. He's a wide open McLaurin down the field, makes that throw on the run, and it's a huge game. So those are the types of developments that we're seeing. So when there is kind of a bit of a stall a little bit sometimes in the down-to-down consistency, those big plays are going to come. And I think there were a couple of those this week where the big plays were just there. You know, and I think there was a lot of kind of trust in Daniels too. They put him in empty a lot, which I think was to kind of make Cleveland show what they were going to do on defense, since they were going to blitz a lot. I think that kind of made them declare what the defensive look was going to be. And then that was trust in Jaden Daniels to only have a five-man protection out of the blitz, kind of make some things happen. The De'Ami Brown touchdown was out of empty. So there were a lot of big plays there where I think they put a lot of trust on him to kind of, you know, be able to be in control of when those blitzes were coming, when they just had a five-man protection. So I think there's, you know, things like that are just little things keep getting added to his plate every week, and it's been really exciting to see.
Again, Dan Pizzuta is our guest here on the Hoffman Show from the 33rd team. So this week they've got Baltimore, a defense that is trying to find exactly the best way to play without Mike McDonald, without two other guys who became DCs, brain drain from that staff, but still a lot of good players, including Roquan Smith in the middle. What opportunities exist for Jaden this week in this offense, and then what are kind of the roadblocks that you think could trip them up?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Baltimore, yeah, they're definitely still trying to figure out what they are. This is still a very good run defense. So I think that could be really interesting if the run game, which has been really good for Washington, well-designed, kind of opened up a lot of things so far this season. If that gets slowed down a little bit and Jaden Daniels now has to do a little more, you know, traditional drop back where maybe the run isn't working quite as much, I think that might be the kind of hiccup. But the pass coverage is just not completely clicking for Baltimore right now. I think they do have a lot of talent. They're still trying to figure out exactly, you know, who should be playing where. Kyle Hamilton's playing more in the box this season than he was last year when he was kind of moving around a little bit. I think they're still looking for that second linebacker to really play next to Roquan Smith. And Roquan Smith, kind of with so much more on his plate this season, not as good in coverage in the middle of the field as he was last year, really like how he's been in Baltimore really his entire career. So there are just, you know, a few things that aren't working quite as well for Baltimore. And I think when you kind of have a passing offense like Washington does, I think that is going to be what leads them this week, because I think Baltimore is still going to be very stout against the run.
Well, I was going to say, if you're Cliff, would you even bother trying? Do you just try to like gun it early and test them in the passing game and kind of do the old let's pass to set up the run? Or because I feel like this is an offense that is built on running the football, and still you have to try it out and see if you can do it better than, say, a team like Cincinnati, who's just not very good at it. Like, if you're Cliff, how would you approach the actual game planning and the balance and knowing when it's time to pull the plug because maybe they are just this good at stopping it?
Yeah, that's probably a thing where they're probably going to have some, you know, RPOs early to kind of give Jaden the choice to see, give the looks. If it's a good run look, oh, we'll try to run. If it's not, oh, we can pass. And that's kind of what they, you know, based a lot of the offense on earlier in the season. So I think there's probably going to be a bit of that. I would expect we see, you know, some bootlegs and things to get the you know, the defense moving a little bit, moving some of those pockets to kind of, you know, open up some things. And like you said, I think it is maybe a, you know, a pass to set up the run kind of thing, where we might see a little more spread out to lighten the box a little bit, use some of that to get the pass game going. And then when there are less defenders in the box is when the run can really start going. That kind of, like, that's kind of what Cliff was really good at back in Arizona. So I kind of expect that to still be a thing, kind of create some of those lighter boxes with structure of how the offense is kind of set up in the formation. And that is kind of going to give you a bit of a run advantage if it can against a defense that's still pretty good stopping it.
On the other side of the ball is Dan Pizzuta with his first Thursday visit here on the Hoffman Show. I am obviously, like most people that would like to see Washington win, fairly concerned about stopping the run. Washington has been very bad at it statistically. Baltimore is averaging, I cannot believe this is a real stat, but we did our preview show this morning and did all my Baltimore prep, and they really are averaging 6.1 yards per carry. If you are Joe Witt Jr. on the defensive side, do you do what Lou Anarumo did and say if it takes 9 in the box to stop it, that's what we'll do and we'll live with the results? Or is there a different, better plan to try to stop Derrick Henry, Lamar, and Justice Hill and everyone else that they'll give carries on Sunday?
Yeah, I think the cool thing for Baltimore as an offense, and definitely not a cool thing as a defense going against them, is they have so many ways to win this year. Like earlier in the season, they were relying a lot on Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson to be kind of that dynamic duo in the run game. And then you did see last week, the Bengals were just like, yeah, we're going to stack the box, have those extra players. And Lamar Jackson was, you know, sitting back in the dropback game, and he had his best game as a passer, and they were able to win that way. And once they kind of, you know, usually you use the run game to kind of wear down a defense, but they were able to use the pass game to do that. And then by the time it gets into overtime, Derrick Henry has that big run because Cincinnati's defense was just exhausted from all the pass rush they were trying to do and all of that. So I don't think there's an easy way to defend Baltimore's defense or Baltimore's offense right now. It's really pick your poison. I think there are probably going to be a lot of teams that are still going to try to stack the box against Baltimore and try to, you know, make a Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers and see if Mark Andrews can actually, you know, if him and Lamar Jackson can connect. You know, like they used to, and just kind of test that. That I'm sure that's probably maybe technically the safer option if you are a defensive coordinator. But I think Lamar to this point has shown he's going to be able to beat that. So that's definitely not, you know, a foolproof way to defend this team.
So when you, to circle all the way back to the QB rankings, where did you have Lamar and how do you grade him out and his continued growth as a passer and how that balances out with the stuff that he's been able to do as a runner since day one?
Yeah, so in the like skill set, the rankings, like the skill score that I'm doing, like right now I have Lamar Jackson third. Which is, you know, he's great. He's, you know, better accuracy than giving credit for, you know, the way he creates and everything he does. Like he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And right now, I wrote about this after the game for my First and 10 column on Monday. He is better right now than he was at this point last season when he ended up winning the MVP. So the fact that he does have now a better running game that you actually have to really worry about the other back individually who is in that backfield, which is just kind of giving him more advantageous looks. One, when he is a runner and when he is a passer, or right now, like he is playing much better than he was last year, which I think is really cool for Baltimore, definitely scary for the defenses that are going to be going against him.
Dan Pizzuta with us here on the Hoffman Show for just a few more minutes as we look at the Commanders and Ravens and then, of course, take a look around the rest of the league. And, you know, Dan, we do these power rankings. We call them our tier rankings because ranking 1 through 32 is too hard. And it's like, okay, who lives together in the neighborhood, so to speak? And we do those on Tuesdays. And our top group we call prime contenders, and like there's a distinctive group that we have, but it just doesn't feel like there is a powerhouse in the way that we've had some of the powerhouses of years past. Is that how you feel as well? Is that something that, as you talk to other people around the league, that everyone feels a little bit more beatable, and that even though like the Chiefs are undefeated, like they haven't set the world on fire yet. They're still clearly trying to figure a lot of stuff out, specifically offensively. Like, I don't think anyone's as scared of the undefeated Vikings with Sam Darnold at quarterback as some of the other teams that we see undefeated through 5 weeks in previous years. Does it feel like there's a real balancing of power this year, or is there a team or a group of teams that you would distinctly put above everyone else and that could compete with previous versions of, you know, the top teams in the league in the last 5 years?
Yeah, I think you're onto something where I don't think there is one fully complete team right now. And I think like that's kind of where we are at the top tier. Like, I think if you look at like DVOA right now, you know, Minnesota is number one. They're far and away number one on defense, but they're 19th on offense. And they're, you know, been up and down, a little inconsistent. When, you know, you have Justin Jefferson wide open, like that's going to work. But, you know, down to down, you are, again, not that worried about a Sam Darnold beating you probably like deep into the playoffs. And then you look at some other teams like Kansas City still figuring out some things on offense. And, you know, that might just be a thing where they spend the regular season just trying some things like they did last year. And then in the playoffs, they're going December into the playoffs, they kind of know what works. We don't have like a San Francisco from last year. That was just an historically good offense. We don't have that type of team this year. So I think everyone is clustered a little bit further together. There's no one crazy standout unit either. And I just don't think we have that like complete of a team that is going to, you know, scare other teams on both sides of the ball, which I think it is going to make for a very interesting season that, you know, there, I don't think there is, you know, one clear, you know, favorite best team, like you said.
Yeah. The Chiefs still like kind of get to be in their own bubble, 'cause they did this last year where it's like, are they good? Are they good? I don't know. They won the Super Bowl. Are they good? And it's like, they won the Super Bowl again. So that's nice. And their defense is nasty. The team that, of course, we figured would challenge them is the one that they played in the Super Bowl last year in San Francisco. They play tonight on Thursday Night Football. I guess I'll ask it this way. How many of their problems do you think are fixable without major changes? Like, would they need to make some kind of mega trade at the deadline to acquire some sort of defensive talent? Or is it as simple as like, wait, they'll get a couple guys back, add McCaffrey, or is it schematic? Like, how fixable do you feel like the 49ers problems are to not necessarily win games, because they're obviously still okay in terms of record and where they are in the division, but to be back at the elite level they've been for much of the last decade?
Yeah, I still think they're mostly fine, and it's just going to be small tweaks. You know, the defense it doesn't look great right now. It's still fifth in defensive DVOA, which, you know, it just is kind of, it's playing better than it looks to a sense. And once they get, I think, a little more healthy, I think they're, you know, they're getting a little more pressure than they are actual sacks, which is, you know, something that I think is going to eventually, you know, help them down the line. Fred Warner wasn't playing, you know, completely healthy for a stretch. And, you know, when he was, you know, the first like 3 weeks, he was probably the best defensive player in football. I think they, you know, don't have that really second or third linebacker a little bit, and they're playing base a little more than I think they were last year. So like, that's one place where in the middle of the defense, it's not working quite as well, but I don't think that's going to be something that completely derails them. On offense, it's really interesting because they have gone a bunch of games without the full set of playmakers. And that's even if you exclude Christian McCaffrey, who hasn't played yet. You know, George Kittle's been in and out of the lineup and might not play tonight, I believe. You know, Deebo Samuel missed some games. So there's been, you know, just up and downs in there, and they really have put a lot on Brock Purdy. And for the most part, he's been playing pretty well, but there have been things where he has the highest average time to throw in the league. And that's a lot of him just kind of sitting back there and trying to extend some plays. And that's not really the game you want him to play. They're only running play action at about like 19% of plays, which is really like what you think of with the Shanahan type of offense that kind of can create some of those open throws in the middle of the field. So they've kind of gotten away from that and put a lot more trust in Purdy. And I think we saw kind of last week, I think there were two plays that he really tried to extend that he took a sack and it pushed them out of scoring range. There's just like some small things like that. And they've been a really bad red zone offense this year. They were one of the best red zone offenses in the league. And I think that's the place where they really miss Christian McCaffrey because he was one of the most targeted players and had one of the highest rates of rushes in the red zone last year. And that piece missing is kind of something that has stopped them from scoring touchdowns when they get into the red zone. So I'm not sure how they completely fix that. But when you do have the full complement of receivers, that's certainly going to help. But there's just like so many little things for San Francisco right now where the margin for error is just not as big as it was last year. So all these little things add up, but there's not just like one big problem, which I'm not sure if that's better or worse for them, but it's not something that I think fundamentally can't be fixed incrementally throughout the season.
Right. No, that makes total sense. And I guess one way you fix it is you go to Germany and you have calf surgery that you can't get in America. So, you know, good luck to Christian McCaffrey on that. Hope that he's back soon, and we'll see what the Niners can do. They got Seattle tonight. That's going to be an interesting one for sure. Seattle coming off the loss to the Giants. And then we'll got a busy weekend, including Commanders-Ravens this weekend. Dan will be writing all about it at the 33rd team, his first in 10 column Monday morning. Check out where Jaden winds up in the QB rankings next week as well. And then, Dan, we'll see you back here on the radio next Thursday. Appreciate you as always, sir.
All right. Sounds good. Always a good time.
Dan Pizzuta, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. He's very smart. Some of the comments we get on the internet are very dumb. We read them anyway. Never read the comments is next. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Entering the back half of the show. And, Anthony, I think I need to find a snack. I'm hungry. It just hit me.
I got some popcorn.
It's not probably going to help me.
Nah, and it's also white cheddar.
Yeah, that's not gonna help your lactose intolerant host over here. I'll see what we got in the old snack cave after this segment. What are you looking for? You trying to find me food? What else do you have over there? Oh, you're gonna eat your food in front of me.
No, I'm not gonna eat them. These get stuck to my fingers, man, so I can't really eat these until like I'm really off the clock.
Because you'd have to press a lot of buttons.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's an important part of your job. Me being hangry during this segment potentially feels like it could be a bad idea. Could be a great idea. I don't know, Anthony. Let's find out. You want to hit a button?
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, we cut up the show into all these different segments. We put them on the internet. You leave comments, we read them. The segments are at the Team 980 and at Craig Hoffman on YouTube. So we always start with a little palate amuse-bouche, just get you up, get you going, remind you what the internet comment section is like if you're unfamiliar. We played the call from Shane in Oxon Hill earlier this week because it was brought up by another caller. And Shane from Oxon Hill famously had just the worst takes you could possibly have during the offseason about a variety of players, including Olamide Zaccheaus, or as he called him, Olamide Zaccheaus. I don't even think he said Zaccheaus, though. I think he said something else. His pronunciations were so bad. Do you have it up? I know you saved it somewhere we could find it very easily. So if we have to play Shane's call one more time just to refresh everyone's memory, I guess if we have to, we could do that. I mean, we hate doing it. It's just not entertaining at all. There's no real purpose to doing it. Anthony, how much longer do I need to stall for? Do you know where you put it or not? Okay. Let's play Shane's call.
The guy had 11 touchdowns over the past 2 years. Terry McLaurin has 9. Olamide Zaccheaus had 10 catches last year. Diami Brown had 100 yards last year. Are we a better team without Jahan Dotson? No, we're not. So stop all the baloney, man. We traded Montez Sweat, and now we have Cleveland Furl, who had 2 sacks. And Dante Fowler, who had 2 sacks. We have Austin Eckler, who is 30 years old. Like, come on, bro. Kendall Fuller is in Miami. Curtis Samuel is in Buffalo. Cam Curl is in with the Rams. And we have a guy, Adam Peters, who's bringing in bums. And everybody's like, oh, just because we're bringing in new faces mean we're better.
Yeah, they're better. They're definitely better. But to get us started on Never Read the Comments, Austin says, you guys need to isolate Olamide so Anthony can just drop it in constantly next time that guy calls in. I do think there's a couple things from that. We just need to have a Shane board. Olamide. Diami, who joined us earlier in the radio show. And then Nap the Man says, that's why Adam Peters is an NFL GM and Shane is a couch potato. That's harsh on Shane. He might be an active fella. You never know, Ant. Nothing? All right, thanks for your participation in the show.
Sorry, I was trying to actually cut up.
You need to cut the Zach.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, fine, fair enough. All right, let's get to some actual comments, shall we? So there's a theme to today's segment, which is people on the internet thinking they're smarter than experts. And I, of course, we welcome the comments. I just kind of think sometimes people need to take a step back, and instead of going, I know more than this expert, go, what do I not understand that this expert is saying? Because curiosity, fellas, let me help you out. Curiosity, an attractive trait in a human being. The ladies will love that. Whoever you're trying to attract of either sex, if you're a lady, you're a fellow, whatever you're trying to, curiosity, attractive to all. So instead of doing what some of these comments do, I will perhaps make some suggestions. So for instance, that dude Trav, says Washington, this is a response to Take Command, a segment or a podcast that I host with Logan Paulson, who played 10 years in the NFL because he was really smart. Washington was behind in the Bucks, Giants, Cincinnati, Arizona games. Every week there's some scenario, some player, some scheme that Logan says we the biggest challenge, and then we blow past it only to have more of this. What happens if? The Ravens' defense is second to last defending the pass and gives up the 7th most points. Mike McDonald is in Seattle. They have a new DC. What have the Ravens shown this year to make you say they'll present any resistance to our league-leading scoring offense? And why do you want to see him struggle when he's already shown you he and Cliff can play from behind? And if your whole concept of... And, like, there's some great valid points in there. Why do you think he would struggle? What have you guys missed? Like, we're not above on Take Command, especially. I'll speak for me and Logan, above some self-reflection. And to go, hey, what is it that we missed here? Because we're always trying to learn and get better. We are curious people. But to suggest, like, oh, they've been behind in all these games. They technically were behind, but they weren't behind in the second half where they had to chase the game. What we're talking about is game flow. What we're talking about is situations where you would have to abandon the run, where you would have to change the way you call your offense and or your defense because you are trying to get a high variance turnover on defense. So we're going to blitz way more than we usually would because we have to take risks. And they've never been in that situation this year outside of Tampa, where they obviously did not find a way to come back. So to pretend like, oh, this Logan Paulson guy, like, what does he know? Like, I don't really understand that. And it's one thing when you're doing that to an NFL vet, and, like, I think a lot of people are like, yeah, hey, we got it. You don't need to defend Logan. But the comments on our interview with Ben Solak from ESPN are, man, there's some people telling on themselves. So, Solak, I've known Ben for a long time. I've known Ben since pre-pandemic at some point. I don't think it was all the way back when I was living in Dallas, but, like, I've known Ben for a long time, and we're not, like, super tight or anything, but, like, I've talked football with Ben Solak for, like, half a decade at this point, where I would go on his shows, and then he's been coming on mine since he blew up and went national. And he and Trevor Sycamo, who's another friend of mine, /friend of ours, like, they used to do a show way back when for some network. And then Ben went to The Ringer, and now he's been hired by ESPN. And Ben has very distinctive thoughts on football. He's not afraid to give an opinion. It's part of the reason why he got his job at ESPN. But this dude studies his Faceoff. And he knows a lot of stuff and he talks to a lot of people. He's very, very smart, but he's also, you know, open to criticism. Sure. But the fact that people just don't believe him because he looks like someone out of central casting for the guys that the football player beats up instead of the football player, like, you're missing out on an opportunity to learn stuff. So, like, I actually appreciate this one from Mr. Bird 09. How do they determine what an RPO is? I've been seeing less and less each game. Also, the wide receiver screens have been reduced game by game. I don't know. I think some of these advanced stats guys are just trying to save face still. Ben referenced in the interview that they throw more screen passes than anybody else in the league, and they throw a higher percentage of RPOs than anyone else in the league. And he even says RPO charting is hard, which it is, because sometimes it's hard to tell what is an RPO, a run pass option, where the run, the handoff is live, or is it just a play action to a screen, or is it, you know, a screen that has a run action on it, and you're going the other way. So sometimes there's no real option. They just kind of try to make it all look the same, but it's predetermined. And sometimes both options are live, and that makes it hard. Some of that's easier if the offensive line is truly run blocking and the running back kind of looks back like, wait, why didn't I get the ball there? Then that was an RPO and the quarterback pulled it and threw the screen. Other times the offensive line makes sure that they don't get caught for legal man downfield and the run blocking isn't as real and that was just a play action screen. Sometimes the bubble is there for decoration on the outside to hold defenders, sometimes out on a run play, and sometimes they could have actually risen up and thrown it. And if you watch the tape and you study the box counts, assuming the quarterback makes the right decision, you can chart those things, and people do, and they're right more often than they're wrong by a lot. But because they threw it such a high percentage earlier in the year, and because they still have used them at not as high as they were, but at a still decently high percentage, then Ben's not incorrect to say they've done this stuff more than other people. And he actually talks about how he means that as a compliment because they've kept defenses off balance. And so people taking this analysis as criticism and taking it personally because it's not the same thing they're hearing from everybody else, like, to me, that's an opportunity you're missing to learn more about your team and about the game. And instead, people would rather do stuff like this. Joshua Henderson, I stopped listening to these clouds. The title is the only thing that made me click. Hey, Anthony, good job us on the clickbait. Eh? Eh?
Good stuff.
Hey, we're doing our job over here. He says, the title is the only thing that made me click. I knew from the jump once we hired Cliff, it was going to be a good day. Didn't know we'd look this good. Sat in the stands at the Arizona game chanting, "We got Kingsbury." I assume that's where the chant went. It just says, "We got Kingsbury." I added the rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look. You didn't know anything when they hired Cliff Kingsbury. And I say that as respectfully as I can. We all have our best guesses on this stuff. And sometimes even the most informed people are going to be wrong. There's reasons why people have been critical of Kingsbury in the past. You don't know whether he's going to adapt and adjust. Cliff did. But there's a lot of coaches that are really stubborn. And they just are determined to do things their way. Many of those coaches have coached in the past, say, 4 years in Ashburn. Or frankly, the past 15 years in Ashburn, and frankly, the past 25, basically go back to Joe Gibbs. And so you might have had a guess that turned out to be right, but we can have the humility to say that it was a guess. There's reasons. There's only so much knowing when it comes to pro football. It's a very random game with a lot of factors. Like, you know, guys get hurt, that changes things. You know, certain influences happen in one game that affects how you adjust the next one. And there's only so much that you can know. Like, these are human beings. And so, again, Dewberry 10-11. I just want to know how many games of them he's watched. I would tell you he's watched all of them. To say bad games are coming because he's been so good, talking about Jaden, Ben Solak saying that Jaden has bad games coming because he's been so excellent so far, is such interesting logic considering their schedule is pretty weak after the Baltimore game. He has 4.4 speed, which he has been numerous times, which has been said numerous times, elevates his floor. And finally, his level of progress has been insane week to week. You can say, well, he's a rookie, so he has to regress, but nothing about his rookie season so far has been rookie-ish, if you will. Tough for me to even remotely buy what he's trying to sell. Oh, and the kicker, Ben was far from the highest guy on Jaden going into the draft. That's true. Jaden was not Ben's favorite player in the draft. That's fine. And is there probably some level of confirmation bias that Ben is seeking? Of course, he's a human being. And he talks about how the week-over-week progression is unlike anything he's ever seen. And it does make this more difficult. But I would also say, like, you're out of your mind if you think that he's going to be the best player on the field for 17 straight weeks. Mahomes has a week per year where you're like, what was that, dude? Josh Allen went 9 for 30 last week. Like, this is, like, that's not a controversial statement. How many, I think reasonable people can disagree on. And then once he has some kind of regression, but like, the is there a chance that Jaden Daniels is just awesome from now until the end of time? Sure. CJ Stroud figured things out pretty quick. And even this year through some of Houston's struggles, he's been really, really good. But the league figures guys out and then you have to adjust. Do I think Jaden will adjust? Yes. Do I have a higher belief in that than maybe Solak does? Sure. But to pretend like a rookie quarterback is going to come in and be the MVP when it's never happened in a league that's over 100 years old, like, you got to realize that, yes, it's your team, that's your guy, that's what we're all rooting for, but that is against the grain. That is against the odds. That is unlikely to happen. And saying the most basic of obvious things should not be a controversial take that results in things then where you get the fullest version of the hot take about smart people, which is you don't understand something they say, so you think it's fake, which is what David Linehat. I think it'd be funnier, Anthony, if it was David Linehat. What would a linen hat look like?
A linen hat?
Yeah. In my head, it's kind of it's like a Kangol shape.
Yeah.
And Kangols are not linen, but like a summer version of a Kangol.
Yeah.
Or like a short bill hat. I could see a linen something like that.
Or just have one that just comes over your head.
Or like a full sun hat.
Yeah.
I prefer straw in that situation.
Ah.
I want the Cliff Kingsbury extra large Saturn hat.
That's great aura.
Yeah.
Cliff.
I don't have that kind of swag, but I do want to prevent that kind of sunburn.
I think you pull it off.
There's only one way to find out. Cliff, can I borrow your hat? David Linehat, or Linehat, but not Linenhat, says, advanced football metrics are made up BS manufactured to create content. Points, total yards, sacks, turnovers, passing, and rushing yards are about the only stats that really matter. These guys don't even figure in garbage time stats. Advanced metrics are not invented to create content because they weren't invented by media people. They were invented by teams. And so they wanted to understand the game better. And then people come out of the teams into the media or talk to people in media. And that's how those stats get into the media. Teams have all kinds of internal things they track and data that we don't even know exists. They have their own formulas for, say, estimated, EPA and things like that. Stats don't exist to provide content. They can be used to create content, and some people do it very, very poorly. I don't think Solak's one of those people, for whatever it's worth. But they are created to create context. Not content, context. Very simply, the reason you don't include, directly to Linenhat's example here, you don't include garbage time stats in some analysis because they're not actually telling of the game. If I want to know how a team plays, if I'm trying to predict what the Ravens do, I want to know how they play when the score is balanced, not when they're up by 20. Now, if I want to know how they react if they get up 20, I might look at just the garbage time stats because that's what I'm trying to figure out. So yes, some advanced stats folks look at specifically first and second down when you're in the first half because that tells you how a team, how a coordinator wants to call a game. Not the entirety of it, because their success rate on third down, how good they are at it, how good the red zone offense and defense are, their rate of committing penalties. Like, there's a bunch of other things, but if you take stats in the context in which they exist, as opposed to trying to take one stat, and this is where people get in trouble, you take one stat and then say that means everything when it doesn't include the context of everything. There's only one stat that does that, points. Ultimately, wins and losses. And even that has its flaws in terms of trying to be predictive of what's going to happen next. That's not very good. But just because you don't understand something, if you get greeted with a statistic or a number or a take that you're like, wow, this person's smart. Because like people have been crushing Mina for some of the takes she had in the offseason. I don't think Mina Kimes is any less smart because I disagreed vehemently in many of the things that we disagreed upon. She has been proven wrong on about the Commander specifically. I don't think she's any less smart. I would hope that she's reflective and, you know, gets better. You know, this goes like, okay, I see what I missed here. That makes my analysis better moving forward. But I don't think she's any less smart. She missed. I have bad takes. Everyone has bad takes. When you do as much talking as we do in a microphone, you're going to have takes that you miss on. But the thing is, like, do you ultimately learn from them? Are you worth listening to based off that stuff? And I just, it's disappointing to see all these comments in our comments specifically about really, really smart people who I wouldn't put on the air unless I thought they were smart and worth it because they got a few things wrong or they had a take that you disagreed with that you happen to be right on, even though it's their job and they have 1,000 other takes that they were right on that you either didn't even bother to listen to or you were wrong on and never want to talk about again. That's the end of my smart people spiel. As for where the Commanders fit in the NFL's hierarchy, some reaction to our tier rankings this week. Are the Commanders prime contenders? Jacob Kemper, 40-86. No, they still haven't beat anybody. Win this week, keep beating the teams we're supposed to, split the division. We finished 11-6 and we have a puncher's chance, but no. We are 4-1 against bad teams, 0-1 against good teams. I think that's fair. You go 1-1 against good teams, I think we're having a different conversation. Aide Smith, RB7CE, says, they're absolutely contenders because outside of week one, they haven't met that defense to stop them. And until till then, they'll keep on rolling. Baltimore's very interesting. Logan and I talking through it this morning on Take Command, which you can check out now, obviously, anywhere you get your pods. He said when you watch the tape, the numbers don't really add up, which is why, by the way, you look at the numbers and watch the tape. And some of the passing stuff they've given up is because they're facing so much passing because they have been up in games. And then down to down, they've been pretty good, but they give up explosives, and now all of a sudden that changes the equation. So I think Washington, like their path to victory through Baltimore and, you know, saying, oh, Baltimore won't stop them. They probably will much more close to what Cleveland did down to down. But as you saw with the explosive plays, Cleveland also gave up more points to Washington in the first half than any of these other teams that were less successful down to town because they gave up such significant chunks at once. Joseph, with a good reminder as well. Joseph Boone, J2T. Right now, I would have to say, yes, they're contenders, depending on what they look like at the trade deadline. And if they make any significant trades, probably determine if that's all or if it lasts all year. Remember, what is now is not necessarily what will be, and the Commanders definitely could be buyers at the deadline. All right, Anthony, some important business to wrap up at the end here. Little bit of fun.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Reaction to Mitch Tischler on the show talking about, as he calls it, rock, scissors, paper. Mm. And whether or not you go rock, paper, scissors, shoot, or it's just rock, paper, scissors. Al versus World. It's just rock, paper, scissors. You put your choice up on that. No shoot, just rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
In this case, it would be rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. But no, I have for a long time been a rock, paper, scissors, shoot person. I feel like as a kid, I might have like...
I think as a kid, you start out rock, paper, scissors. But as you grow...
grown folks edition...
Yeah, there's rock, shoot. Paper, scissors, shoot. You got to shoot.
JC Captain Chaos says, I might be telling my age or it's an area code thing. He's a 202 guy, but there was no word shoot mentioned when I was growing up. That's new. It was just rock, paper, scissors, but you still went after scissors in silence. I hope that makes sense. Not really. If it was just rock, paper, scissors and you go on scissors, that would I get. But if it's rock, paper, scissors and then you throw something on the fourth one, yeah, that'd make no sense.
Shoot.
Right, you say shoot. Yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors, silence? Like, no. JC, you must mean the first one.
I hope so.
And then last but not least, Anthony, reaction to my push-ups from Competition Wednesday.
Uh-oh.
Mr. K. Hall, 2002, says, simply, damn. To which I responded, I said that and many other four-letter words as I was doing my 100 push-ups in two commercial breaks.
That's a lot of four-letter words you probably use over there.
For a lot of push-ups. And then Billy Solser says, my man, get that work. My respect for you just increased.
That's respect then, man. There you go. Show the guns.
Just a little bit. Yeah. I was watching the tape back. I was proud of my form. I'll take it. I think I did a good job.
That's good stuff.
I never want to have to do it again.
You sure?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to lose.
Okay.
And I mean, if I do lose, I don't want 100 push-ups.
Well, if you keep losing, then you might have to do everything.
That is true. The ice bath is waiting upon me.
Yes.
This weekend. All right. When we get back, Joe Witt Jr. is waiting upon you, the Commanders defensive coordinator. You'll hear from him, and then Cliff Kingsbury in our pick six at 6:00.